listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
And welcome to Nerds Assemble episode 230. I'm Paul.
I'm Emily.
I'm Paul, aka Cocker.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week we're going to be talking about toxic fandoms.
Oh, joy.
And toxic fans.
It's just a delightful topic to you.
Not toxic Avengers, but toxic fandom.
I think first up, surely before we get started, some kind of definitions need to happen.
Okay.
Nutters.
Twats.
Okay, so I would say for me it's people who try to wield the fan base to fit their own kind of personal opinions. So say, for example, a toxic fan will probably try and say that any true Star Trek fan hates Discovery.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
For me, toxic fandom often kind of circulates into really weird stuff around trying to dictate where a text, a series, get used, where something should go, with in a way that's really unrealistic to what has happened previously, all the resources available, and they'll get particularly like sort of entitled about it.
There's
a sense of entitlement.
Yes, and not willing to look at change. Not willing to allow change to happen.
They're kind of fundamentalists.
Their level of,
you know,
belief, yeah.
Yeah, it's just such and such a series, say, you know, since you've already mentioned it, Star Trek. though, you know, every single one seems to have, DS9 doesn't count. I remember hearing this at the time when DS9 was, you know, was a new thing. Yes. It doesn't count because it's not on a ship. The main character isn't a captain. Yep. And it's not even on a Federation place. You know, they don't go anywhere, so it shouldn't be called Star Trek.
Yep. And then Voyager. There was issues with Voyager, wasn't there?
But Voyager was bollocks.
No, it wasn't. He still had some very good episodes.
I like Janeway. I like EMH.
Chewbacca.
I like Janeway. I like EMH. And I like Seven when she gets a bit more character rather than just a an interesting outfit.
Yep.
That's one way of putting it.
But it's just, you know, such and such a series, it doesn't count because.
Yeah.
And it was in several Star Trek groups when Discovery started off, and the amount of bullshit I saw where, no, it doesn't count because it's full of liberal politics was my favourite. And it's just, I see you're new to Star Trek, having never, ever watched any of it.
Crazy.
It does slightly remind me of that takedown that happened on Twitter the other day with
Narrow it down.
There's a lot of takedowns.
Yeah, with Neil Gaiman.
You talking about this earlier?
Yes. Neil Gaiman tweeted that Jodie Whittaker was, you know, kind of an excellent doctor. Like, there's kind of really no doubt about it, but that, you know, she kind of played it well and blah blah blah, and basically praised it. And some asshole kind of turned around and said, "Oh well, you must be like a new Who fan that has just started, and not, you know, kind of doesn't remember the good old days." And it was like, dude, I grew up on that. My first one you know, was like William Hartnell and kind of writing for the show and stuff.
Well, was it the books?
Yeah, it might have been the books. But yeah, the point is basically this toxic fan, you know, pretty much accused Neil Gaiman of being a brand spanking newbie to the series.
Well, because he actually liked Jodie Whittaker's Doctor.
Yeah.
What a toss bag.
I've got the tweet right here.
Oh, you have? Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So Brendan replies to Neil Gaiman and says, "Ah, so you're wrong, y'all. A new fan because the Doctor is a woman, not a real fan of the show since the 60s then." And Neil Gaiman replies. And I just think I like Neil Gaiman because there are so many more brutal ways he could have put this.
Mm.
But he says, "My first episodes of Doctor Who were the first William Hartnell Dalek story. You can read about it in my introduction to the first Doctor Who novelization." So it's just a very gentle whack with a giant hammer.
Yes.
There were some, I think I mentioned it a few episodes back, where some of the comic skaters, which will get into, were getting at Neil Gaiman because he said that his first published story was this in this, I think it was 2000 AD.
Yeah.
There was some debate whether it was 2000 AD or whether it was the DC story. And he said it was this way around, and this fan came along and said, "Actually,
oh God,
it's the other way around." And Neil replied, you know, once again very nicely, "No, that was commissioned first, but it was published later. So, you know, when I say my first published or my first, you know, commissioned, I know, kind of." But he said it in a much more polite way.
But also probably sounding quite tired at the same time.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, I'm getting people explaining my own bloody career at me.
Can I talk about...
Would that be classed as, like, to coin the term, fansplaining?
Could be.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
So, Emily?
I was going to say, I think my main experience of toxic fandom has been more since I got into Supernatural. There are some really divisive groups, or really... not happy with other members of the fandom style groups within Supernatural. And it all centers around types of shipping, which just makes it all the more ridiculous. It's just like, there's a saying, it's ship and let ship. I feel like it's the best way to go about fandom if you go into that degree of fan work creation. Like, It doesn't matter if it's a canon ship, if it's one that you think you can see and you want to create something or read something about it, blah, blah, blah. Let's forget accusations of queer baiting that Supernatural's had since about season 4, obviously. But it's just kind of like, well, like, do we have to have arguments about whether or not a ship is canon or is going to become canon? And then you get into the really weird side of the fandom where you've got people that think, like, Jared and Jensen, so Jared Padalecki and Jensen Ackles, who are the actors that play Sam Winchester and Dean Winchester, are actually together, and their wives are, what's the term, is it?
Beards.
To disguise this relationship, and they're actually together secretly, and oh my god, and then they'll also tend to ship a little bit aside of Winchester, which is Sam and Dean together, which is obviously an incest ship, which is like, it's fanfic and that, it's fan creations, you can just let it go. If it's not your cup of tea, just leave it alone, you don't need to go there, it's usually tagged, easy to avoid. But at the same time though, it's like it's the real person stuff, and it's just like where they're like really, really believe that it's all a lie, their lives are all a lie.
I haven't read them. Not that there's anything wrong with it, etc., blah blah blah, but I have seen mention of the whole you know, people, it's not just with Supernatural, but, you know, I've seen the stuff where they're writing fanfic of the actors.
Yeah, but the thing is...
And it's just a bit, that's a little bit strange.
It's not so strange when they decide to make it a complete alternate universe and it has no basis in reality at all. Like, it just so happens that the actors are other people almost, and you take some of their known public characteristics and try to write a story about them being FBI agents or something. That kind of
reminds me of the episode of Black Mirror.
That's sort of just about okay. It's when they're like, no, this it's in this reality, it's real, and it's just like, oh my gosh. There are obviously people that also at least in Supernatural, also think that Misha Collins and Jensen Ackles have got a thing going on. Now, that those two together as a real person thing is called cockles.
Alive-oh.
Yeah. And that's because they can be quite cutesy around each other. So the thing is that Jared and Jensen can also be quite cutesy around each other. And if the three of them are around each other, which is J2M, Jared and Jensen is J2, Jared, Jensen and Misha is J2M, it's just like, okay. But the thing is that the people that tend to go on the J2M side don't actually believe anything. They tend to be like, this is adorable. And Cockle's side, not quite, tends to be as far gone as the J2 side, but sometimes it goes a little crazy. But then moving back away
sometimes.
From that, moving back away from that, though, the ship wars between Destiel and almost anything else. It's kind of like people, but the thing is, it's not Destiel against anything else. It's Destiel in that you've got people who truly believe it's going to be canon and that it's been completely and utterly codified since like season 4, or yeah. And I'm just like, Destiel is a ship that I will read, I will write, I will happily watch an episode and go, oh yes, I can see why you might get that idea. But I'm not gonna go to war over it. Wincest also, actually, in the first couple of seasons, you can kind of see where people might have been coming from on that front. It's weird and scary, but like if you look at the way that like the characters were written together, it's like, okay. Yeah, that was a little bit on the nose, Kripke. What were you thinking? And in a way it was actually a good thing that Castiel was introduced. Yeah, but it's the whole shipping thing that kind of gets just...
You could say he was slipped in.
But it's the shipping thing that kind of gets crazy Supernatural and just makes some of the biggest arguments. Though, admittedly, we all feel a bit entitled when it comes to episodes written by Buck Lemming. That audacious writing
pair. Most of them. There was that good episode, wasn't there? Wasn't it the latest season or something?
There was maybe one good episode, but they occasionally, every blue moon, write something that's tolerable. But it's like every blue moon. It's so rare.
To be fair, though, I mean, that's more of a criticism of basically their style of just kind of killing people off for no other reason than to generate drama.
Yeah, but they've also written some terrible episodes like Route 66, which is the crazy killer truck in season 1, the racist killer truck.
I can't even remember that one.
Yeah, it's probably for the best that was them. so, yeah. But at the same time, you get people who will kind of call for blood on that kind of thing. And that happens in every fandom, as far as I can tell. Decisions are made and blood is called for.
I mean, look at the what happened with Rick and Morty after the Szechuan? That sauce that McDonald's did that one time.
They
had a bit of a kind of banter with the kind of creators over Twitter about it, and then they decided to bring it back for a little bit, and the fandom kind of got like stupid over it. I'm pretty sure that's why Retroid stayed away from Rick and Morty for so long.
It wasn't, but it kind of didn't help.
Mm.
Well, 100% the reason why, you know, I sort of stayed away from that is that I usually, you know, prefer to watch series, you know, with my other half.
Hmm.
And that can stall if it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't chime with her.
That's fine.
And she didn't really get on with it. So it's just, you know, if she, I watch a few episodes. As it is, I'm now entirely caught up, and I do like Rick and Morty, but I can also kind of see why, you know, she wasn't getting on with it.
Mm. I mean, especially the people that kind of seem to idolise Rick as well. That doesn't work with me.
Yeah, the rule of thumb with that is, if you think you're Rick, you're actually a Morty. Because, no, it's a... for universes, etc., but he's also a complete bastard.
He is.
With almost complete lack of empathy. But yeah, there are the people who are, oh no, I'm really like this character. You're not.
No.
You are simply not. It's not, that's not how it works.
And you really shouldn't be like, nobody should be like Rick. Rick is a force that can cause terrible things to happen to everyone close to him and the wider wider existence.
He's like the embodiment of nature in the sense that he will basically just go through you and not give a shit about any damage that he does to you.
Yeah.
He certainly doesn't, if anything he does could be considered an experiment in terms of how he treats people, like, it pretty much goes against all the ethical sort of rules for experimentation on a psychological...
There are obviously loads of people out there that kind of don't give a shit about, like, ethics when it comes to science, and it's like, really? I mean, you know, you want another, like, Zimbardo experiment or something shit?
Meanwhile, toxic fandoms.
Yeah, yeah.
Or toxic fans.
Yes, stop dragging us off topic, Paul.
Naughty.
Honestly, with your tangents just going off. I'm enjoying the moment while I can.
Another obviously really toxic fandom, and obviously some stuff has come to light about it, is Star Wars. And especially like with the latest one with Kelly Tran being chased off of social media.
Yep.
And just the absolute mind-bending, like, what the fuck of some of the supposed fans out there.
Yeah. This is what I don't get, because people don't seem... Some toxic fandom for me is just people very stuck in their ways and they don't like change. And what some people don't seem to get is that to actually see something get to its... To keep it fresh and to keep it in everybody's minds and to keep it actually entertaining, it needs to evolve and change.
Yeah. And
you can't rely on the same things all the time.
One of the reasons I saw against her character Rose was that there were no Asian characters in the original trilogy.
Well, you know, there's how many different alien ethnicities?
Yeah. And there's a new alien. They go to a completely different planet, which was never mentioned in the original, you know, stories, trilogies, expanded universe, anything like that. These fans, absolutely fine. Asian woman, liberal politics, it's SJW, is ruining it. And it's just, you idiots. You absolute bloody... These people, you know, these are the kinds of people I just... they make me despair. They think they're being at the forefront and, you know, amazingly...
forward-thinking.
Yeah, yeah. But, no, you're just being your granddad. You're just being your racist, stupid, ignorant granddad. That's all you're being.
Just going backwards.
Yeah. Oh, you can't have Asian people in this series. Why? Why? Or you can't have a female character because... I saw several blokes complaining that Ray is just a Mary Sue. What the hell is Luke?
Mm. I mean, that's...
Jesus Christ! It's just Ray is almost a gender swapped Luke, except without yes. the, you know, the same different origin, but it, you know, common horror, you know, absolutely nothing whatsoever going on with the, you know, the situation where, you know, we were first introduced to the character, and yep. then events kind of take over, and find that there's a fate.
You say almost the same. I actually find Ray to be a little bit less of an idiot. Luke,
oh, yeah.
Luke was an idiot.
Luke was naive.
Mm. Yeah, he was quite naive because of how he was brought up. He was very sheltered.
Whereas, Ray is much more on the ball.
Yes.
He's far more
Is that more down to having to bring herself up, though, from a young age when she was abandoned?
Quite possible. Quite possible. She had to grow up first.
Did anyone see the story about most of the criticism of The Last Jedi was from a Russian troll farm?
Yes.
Someone explain this.
God. What, the Russian troll farms or just in general?
What happened in the case of The Last Jedi?
As we all know, Russia seems to have a nice thing going on with just sowing stories, and you know, with an absolutely scattergun approach, just to and this particular one was about how there was infighting, and it was, you know, just. You know, absolute bollocks with the, you know, the storyline, and it made no sense, and it was all politics and blah blah blah, and the, you know, trying to push, you know, the old guard out and bring in these new, you know, lefty liberals so they can push their agenda, and you know, same old kind of crap.
Mm.
And of course, the right wing, although they're not right wing, they're centrist. Spoilers: centrists are mostly right wing. utterly fell for it, just like with. Pretty much everything else you can think of, you know, in politics as well. But you know, in this case, it was in Star Wars fandom, and it was complete bollocks, but it told them what they wanted to hear. That they weren't being unreasonable. They were the ones who were being slighted against. So, of course, they latched onto it wholeheartedly. And they had this whole story about how it had been a bomb, and... Rian Johnson had been fired from doing any more Star Wars because of it, and Episode 9, when it came along, was going to throw out the storyline because it was so bad, etc., etc., etc.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of gets me to, you know, my main grievance one of my main grievances about toxic fandoms, which is basically trying to change the narrative behind... What's going on with the fandom? Like, that, you know.
Yeah, that is the main thing. That is the main characteristic of toxic fandoms. There is no room for dissent except theirs. Theirs is the only narrative. If there's anyone who believes or wants anything else to happen, no, then, you know, they've clearly got an agenda against the other, you know, against their group, who are the... true fans, and they're the ones who should be pushed out. Oh, and of course, all the real fans are on their side.
Mm.
You see that again and again. I saw it in the Gamergate bullshit. I'm seeing it in Comicsgate, where they're absolutely convinced that people, you know, all the readers are on their side. That, you know, the only possible reason for falling readership is because of, you know, feminazis and SJWs ruining the comics. It's not anything whatsoever to do with the previous things we've talked about, where
comic events, availability, representation, the fact that actually the people with the money may not be the traditional buyers of comics anyway, so they might want to try and serve other markets that have money.
I've never been able to work out the kind of logic And it was there years ago when I was, I had, standing orders at my local comic shop. All of that, I was spending, I was throwing money at the comics industry. It was one of my, things. And I couldn't understand the people who were, oh, no, the comics should be this, and it should only be written for these people. I was never a fan of the comics, of the superhero, genres. Mm. Mm. I would read other stuff. Comics, written and drawn by, like two people teams who were selling maybe a few thousand, if that, an issue. Meanwhile, you had your big superhero comics that were selling tens of thousands, sometimes over 100,000 for, like a big landmark issue. And of course now, because things have shifted, people have got other things to do with their money, and comics have been on a long, slow, downward slide for decades when it comes to readership. But no, the only possible reason why numbers have got so low now is because of women or some bullshit like that. And it's just, these are the kinds of people who will, oh no, we don't want liberal things, and we don't want your politics into it.
Your politics then, as well. Keep your politics out.
Beg pardon? Is this after dark? I have no idea. I've had dealings with a few of these wankers, and all you have to do is, if they say, we don't want your politics in this, send them that cover of Captain America punching Hitler. And you get blocked. And you go, oh, well, you've clearly proven your point there, haven't you, you tosser? the whole thing as well with, previously mentioned Neil Gaiman having his, comic writing career explained to him by a tosser. He's like, no, I think he might know better than you, mate. I really think he might know better than you.
I would like to trust that Neil Gaiman would,
Yeah.
Granted,
I'm speaking as someone who's got an absolutely bloody awful memory. People are, quite welcome to, tell me that, I've done something in, I've said, I did something in the wrong order, because I probably have. I don't remember. What day is it?
Saturday.
Oh, that's okay then. It's just baffling to me. I've never, any fandom I've been in, I've never thought I am the only one that counts.
Yeah. If you enjoy something, just enjoy it.
Yeah, and if something is going in a direction that, I don't like, then I tend to just sort of drift away from it. Yeah, it's like, it's becoming not for me.
Yeah.
And the thing is that long-running stuff, as we've kind of been saying, needs to evolve and stuff at times, because if they find that their market share is declining because the group they were selling to either just isn't interested anymore or not around anymore. I mean, let us consider for the moment the Coronation Street effect, which has been mentioned several times on this podcast over the years. But the likes of Coronation Street, I'm not sure if it's reversed the trend yet, but it was losing more viewers than it was gaining in the last 10 years because of the age of its viewership. Getting to that age, where it kind of has a habit of dying, unfortunately, sad as it is. And obviously they've had to probably here and there take steps to ensure. I mean, I haven't checked Coronation Street to see if they have definitely taken steps to ensure that they maintain, the interests of millennials, for instance. I'm assuming they've done a little bit of that, though, because they're still going. But
there was that avocado toast and buying diamonds episode that they did.
actually a lot of long-running shows are having to do things a little bit differently, bringing different types of storylines and stuff to open up their viewership, because actually a lot of younger generations aren't watching broadcast television. They're streaming. Or they're not watching telly at all. They're doing something else.
I mean, from an outside perspective, though, I will kind of point out that there is often a toxicity towards newer fans anyway.
Yeah.
With, you know, stuff like, you know, being kind of accused of, if you like, say, for example, the, what was it, 2009 version of Star Trek or Into Darkness or whatnot, you sometimes get accused of basically, you're one of those, are you? One of those fans that only likes the, you know, the new movies.
The new reboot. Films, yeah.
It's like, well, you know, just kind of be a bit more friendly and show them around the rest
of the
fandom.
What about people who aren't that keen on older Doctor Who, as in, like, the people who've only watched 2005 onwards, yeah, but the old Doctor Who's got some terrible things in its closets, which were actually highlighted to us in a video we watched earlier, which included not having that. There was some very racial issues with some past episodes that could be best never to happen again. Maybe just no.
Oh, yes.
I mean, nobody
true.
Would do that today. One would fucking hope. I think
you would hope.
This is, what was it? There was, like, we saw a clip of an episode. Which Doctor was it?
Oh, I think it was. See, I've got him.
Do they have a scar?
Yes, Tom Baker.
That Doctor.
Which is the only Doctor who counts? The only real Doctor, Tom Baker.
You do make a point there. I mean, the thing is, you either take it with a pinch of salt because it's different times and that, and you can see how it evolved. But you do make a point there, yes. That's why I like the new Doctors, though.
Yeah.
Because the new Doctor Who has brought it... For me, it's brought it back to life for a whole new generation. My kids can now enjoy Doctor Who because they've made it more relevant to my... Yeah. To, you know, my kids.
Has your kids...
It might not be as relevant to me anymore.
Has your kids actually seen any of the earlier stuff, or...?
I used to try to convince them to watch the earlier stuff with me.
And did you manage to?
Not particularly. They actually tended to sleep in on the Sunday when it was on Gold for some reason when I was watching it.
I would say the secret there would be to record whole stories and then.
I did. Well, that's what I liked about Gold back in the early 90s. They showed all the stories in the Sunday morning. They would just have like a 2-hour run of a episode and then the next episode the following week, which was quite cool. But it was, from my perspective, it got a lot of people more into Doctor Who, and they did start looking at the old classic ones.
And I've got friends who...
some of them have not aged well at all.
Well, yeah. It's the same with any series, really. Sorry for interrupting that, but I was going to say, I've got friends who, they're Star Trek fans, but they've never really bothered with the original series.
Yes.
Because they got introduced to Next Generation. So to them, Next Generation were the relevant, and then, you know, DS9, Voyager, you know, those were the new ones. Those were the ones that they watched.
Yeah.
Whereas that other one was the primary coloured TV, you know, TV series with silly aliens from the 60s.
To be honest, that describes us, not the silly aliens thing, but the Star Trek fans that have never really watched the original series, because it's always seemed really, really camp and really, really daft and often like really, really sexist and regressive from our perspective. I know it was progressive from, you know,
It was very progressive for its time, but it was also a product of
exactly. And Shatner has always kind of put me off it.
And, he's a bell end.
I'm not gonna be a hypocrite and turn around and say that Shatner's like, you know, awful and, you know, whatnot, and, you know, basically saying anything about like all true Star Trek fans shouldn't like him or anything. You can like who you like, and that is kind of the point. You know?
At the same time, for all intents and purposes, as far as I can tell, Misha Collins and William Shatner have fallen out at some point in the last few years. So Shatner's quality as an individual is perhaps slightly in question, because Misha Collins is a darling.
You're on hashtag Team Misha.
I am on hashtag Team Misha, at least when it comes to comparing those two. But yeah, there was definitely falling out over something publicly.
Oh dear. Well, that
Twitter was involved.
Generally, just like Trump, I think someone should take the throw away from Shatner. Mm-hmm. And they should have done it retrospectively quite a long time ago. It's like, yeah, we already know you're a bit of a bell end, Mr. Shatner, but you know, it was much better when that bell endery was restricted to people you knew who had gone to cons and, you know, talked to him and he was a bell end to them, rather than, oh, let's log into the bell end channel to watch the bell end being a bell end.
I mean, I think in a way, we've always had like people that have like idolized Shatner over, you know, other aspects of Star Trek, and I think that's
its own little element of Star Trek toxic fandom.
I mean, the fact that it's idolized is not necessarily toxic in of itself, but the idea that kind of holding his version of Kirk up as, you know, this, you know, brilliant captain who, you know, goes down to, you know, planets and kicks ass and, you know, takes names and whatnot, and it's just like
gets the green and blue alien ladies.
Yeah, and it's just like you kind of reveling too much in his traditional masculinity, and that doesn't really gel all that well with the general kind of feel of Star Trek, in my opinion.
And if you know about the origin of Star Trek and how Gene Roddenberry tried to get it, you know, on air in the first place, it was the first series to have two pilots.
Mm. Yeah.
And the original one, The Cage, if you watch that, yes, it's got a bit of an air of Forbidden Planet to it. It feels very 60s. But on the other hand, it's also a very progressive, and it's a different type of captain. Captain Christopher Pike is much more in the Picard mold, where he's more thoughtful. You've got a female first officer that he calls Number One, played by Major Barrett.
Wow.
You've still got Spock there.
But he is just the science officer.
Yeah, and he's the science officer, but of course, you know, they have a different doctor.
Yes.
Who, you know, he's fine, but he's just the doctor character. He doesn't, you know, the dynamic didn't seem to be there. That was with DeForest Kelly as McCoy.
Hmm.
But in a lot of ways, it's a real missed opportunity that, you know, the original pilot, the original vision of Star Trek didn't, you know, take off. But of course, the character of Kirk and his womanizing and fist fights and stuff like that was very much down to the network.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're paying for the episodes to be made. They wanted more or less a space western. They wanted them to go to new alien planets for the guy to get the girl and have fist fights and blah, 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 and show how superior they are, because, of course, they're, you know, a proxy for America and, you know, good, decent, honest, you know, values, et cetera, et cetera. So all these people who idolise Kirk, they're idolising a 60s stereotype that the network pretty much said, you've got to give us this for us to pay for it.
Hmm.
So it's not what Gene Roddenberry wanted in the first place. And, of course, that all kind of ties in with utterly missing the politics of the original Star Trek episodes. You know, for the record, three seasons of the original series. The first one was the closest to the vision that Gene Roddenberry wanted. Second one had more interference from the network. And by the time the third one came around, that's the one that's got most of the goofy, shite episodes.
Yes.
That's the one that's got like Spock's brain and the episode where a shunned girlfriend of Kirk uses a bit of alien machinery to swap bodies with him. So that's a really cringy episode to watch, because if you can imagine what a late 60s vision of a woman occupying a man's body and how that, you know, how they, you know, and then couple it with William Shatner acting. And it's oh, just, dear. Oh God, that's a bad episode. That, okay. Oh, Jesus.
And we need to roll this back to Toxic Fandoms and wind up on this discussion thread.
What I was going to, you know, I was actually on topic. Aha. You know, the whole thing there is, you know, if with them liking Kirk and the, you know, that he's captain, that tallies in with some of the shit I've seen in, you know, the worst areas of Star Trek fandom, where on one hand, they're saying, oh, Discovery is liberal SJW propaganda and it's not real proper Star Trek. On the other hand, they're posting pictures of Trump as Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's like, whoa, that, you know, I can really tell where your politics is, you know, are coming from here.
Yeah.
And how do those people watch entire runs of these series that have got, you know, a progressive slant to them and just miss that? I don't understand. I don't understand these people.
No.
As a fan of the fandom that has the only show that's equally liked by Republicans and Democrats in the US.
Interesting.
I'm not sure quite how that happens. And in fact, actually, Supernatural is a rarity in that regard. So, yeah. It's one of those things.
For me, I think the question of toxic fandoms kind of come up mostly because your fandoms kind of, in certain respects, could be classed as like part of your identity.
Mm.
You know, so like being like a Trekkie or something like that is, you know, so sometimes, you know, I kind of introduce myself as, oh, I'm a bit of a Trekkie.
Mm.
Or, yeah, I'm a bit of a Doctor Who fan. And so, you know, it kind of, it's kind of got this identifier to it. That
yes,
it. I can understand why people get passionate about it, and you know why people want that label to mean something personal to them. But you cannot have it as Trekkie means, you know, that Discovery is bad, that Voyager's bad, that the only true Star Trek cap, you know, decent
Voyager
captain
is bad though.
It wasn't that bad.
Well, it's poo. That's just me though.
Sorry, I think you cut out there. It just sounded like you said it's poo.
Well, if that's what it sounded like.
I think I'm gonna move this on, guys. Basically, but at the same, just to round up, it's like toxic fandom. No.
Be passionate.
Fundamentalist. Yeah, fundamentalist wankers who will only tolerate their
interpretation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the I think it was at the Vulcan quote about infinite possibilities and infinite combinations or something like that is probably a good way to describe the best way to look at fandoms.
Hmm.
Especially when you're kind of dealing with people that are creative. So, you know, kind of people that, you know, make cosplay, you know, do fan art, you know, fanfics and whatnot. And they could all be considered, yes, okay, so they're not canon, but by the same token, it's kind of fun to imagine, I don't know, like Locutus of Borg doing whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But by the way, IDIC, as I mentioned, is infinite diversity in infinite combinations.
Ah, that's the one, infinite diversity.
Okay.
Which, of course, is a very SJW thing, which was just recently put in you know, Reed's notes, oh, the original series.
Super recent. Moving on, I think a little bit of what people have been up to before we wrap it up for this episode, gentlemen.
Okay.
Can I go first before I
die? You go first. You go first, just in case.
Okay. So, yeah, because I'm ill. It's actually been kind of painful doing this episode, but I've been bored Most of this week.
So, I've been in pain, but I've been bored, so I just went with the pain.
So I have been replaying Skyrim quite a lot on account of being, like, the playthrough I was doing whilst I was exercising has now become the playthrough I've been doing whilst being very ill. I'm doing stuff that I haven't done in the game before. Like little side quests and stuff. I have been doing main quest lines that I've done before, and I'm currently reached the point where I've completed like the Thieves Guild's like main quest, right? And I'm like, okay, well, I could do a few of the side ones to try and get the Thieves Guild back up to full standing again. But I'm also contemplating, I decided, one, I would marry in the game, two, that I would adopt two sweet little girls, and my wife's saying to me, oh, we need a bigger house, and I'm kind of looking at, there are only two non-racist areas in the game, unless you complete the Civil War side quest, basically, for the Imperials. And those two non-racist, you don't have to build them houses, are in Whiterun and Solitude, which are about the only real Imperial holdouts in the entire game. Because the Stormcloak side is very racist. Like, I went to Windhelm just to see, could it be... No, it can't be less racist. As I'm currently thinking, well, I don't want to buy a house in an area filled with people that might hate myself and my children. So I think what I'm going to have to do is to complete the Civil War sideline on the Imperial side and just wipe out the Stormcloak Rebellion in order to end the Civil War so that I can safely buy a house in an area where my family will feel welcome.
So you basically interfered with a Civil War in order to buy a house.
I'm going to be. This is the conclusion I came to after playing it today. because I don't want to move into Solitude. It's a bit too upper class for me. But also, I'm thinking of joining the Dark Brotherhood at some point, and like, there's one particular quest line in that where it's like, do I really want to be living in Solitude, considering what I'm going to be getting up to? And because there's some big stuff that happens in Solitude as a part of the Dark Brotherhood storyline. I've also been reading and watching a lot of horror this past week. Been reading Pet Sematary for the first time.
Yeah, cool.
And obviously the new trailer for the new film. So obviously there's the original film, but this is the new film that came out this week. That's worth checking. It's looking interesting. And that's out in April, at least in the US, from what I can tell. And I've also been reading I just got to look at the cover a minute to find the title. A collection of ghost stories called Tales from the Dead of Night. 13 classic ghost stories edited together by various authors from like the last century or so, or the previous century. Including one story which, once I started reading it, I realised was set 5 minutes down the road, which just made it that extra bit creepy. It was just like, oh, it's set there. Oh, this is terrifying. Oh, great, thanks, because I'd never thought of that before. And if it is where I think it is as well, it's on this hill called Comprigny Hill, or at least it might be near there. And Comprigny Hill locally was Hangman's Hill. And the story doesn't even cover this, the fact that it was the hill where people used to be hung when found guilty of crimes, and their bones were buried in what are now fields there. And there are farms that, there's like a couple of people that will farm the land there, and every so often they will plough up old bones. It's delightful.
Yay!
So this creepy ghost story, didn't even manage to touch on that. But I'm pretty sure it was set there because of the way they were the author was describing how the main character in the story got to this particular place and stuff, and where it was in relation to the train station in town. So I was like, oh, yay! Oh God!
Cookie.
Oh, hang on, can I go next? Because Skyrim.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I've been getting back into Skyrim because it's been... well, I played Skyrim on the 360 on launch and just consumed it because Elder Scrolls. And it's been a while. I picked up the Steam version, you know, with a, you know, the full intention of, well, if I owned it on 360, I want to own it on PC as well. And then you've got mods. Yeah. Never got, really got around to playing it. And then, of course, they did the remastered versions. And on PC, you got a free upgrade. So if you already owned Skyrim on, you know, on Steam, you got the remastered version just as a, you know, here for supporting us. Which was, thanks very much, I'll have that.
Cool.
So, I've been playing it for the last few weeks, and I'm a Khajiit this time. Because I'm a very handsome tiger boy.
Cool.
And I'm accidentally Archmage at the moment. Just sort of fell into that, and he's like, oh, right, okay. Because of the way my wife plays it, I had previously not really bothered with archery.
Mm-hmm.
I was just using, you know, magic and, you know, things like that. So I thought, okay, I'll give archery a go. It turns out that my Khajiit is very good at twanging people from across the maps.
My Redguard is similarly inclined, more just on the martial arts rather than the magical arts, but certainly archery is a it's up there.
So yeah,
my top killing skills.
Cool.
I think mine is level 50 something now, just for archery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, go on.
I was going to say, I've got 50 something for archery, but then I've got something like 60 something for one handed. But I took the dual wielding perk, so actually I've got a weapon in both hands when I do that, and it's just like, well, you're not going to get any hits in, are you, opponent?
Twang 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 twang. Yeah, I'm mostly archery, a good bit of magic, so I like burning the buggers. I've got a few enchanted weapons. I've got into the enchanting, so I've got a glass bow, which I enchanted with fire, and I've got an elven one which has thunder on it.
Oh, cool.
I've got a really plain elven bow, but I've got an enchanted glass axe, like war axe, so single hand axe with fire.
Yeah,
I like using that.
I do really like the look of the glass weapons, where it's kind of a, you know, a deep green.
Mm.
They're very nice. I don't really bother with shields or anything like that, because most of the enchanted weaponry I've got is two-handed anyway. So what I'll usually do is I'll take someone out ranged, or just cut down their health a fair bit because I'll be sneaking.
Yeah.
And then I'll swap to a two-handed enchanted sword or something like that, and start just hacking into them with the occasional bit of I've got the fire shout.
Oh yes.
So that's also very good for setting them on fire and then just whacking them with a big sword. That's always good. And poor sword Lydia having to carry my burdens.
Nice.
But I've done that. I'm an Archmage. I've not really bothered with much. I've not even gone to the priests.
With greybeards.
I've not even been to see the greybeards about that. I've just not bothered yet. I will, but I'm busy doing everything else.
I've progressed the main story enough so that I could get particular shouts. I'm now ignoring the main story for the moment, though I did have the awkward conversation that happens with, I believe it's Esbern, he's with the Blades, about him finding out who the true leader of the Greybeards are. And I kind of noped out of that conversation because I wasn't about to commit to killing a dragon that had been helpful.
Yeah, it's like, no, dragons, nice.
Yeah.
But I've not done Thieves Guild yet. I've not done Assassin's Guild. Most of the time I've just been wandering around finding all the little caves and cutting up Falmer.
Cool.
So it's just really nice to be able to wander around such a world.
Yeah.
Probably similar to, you know, with you, Emily, you know, the way you play it, where you can just go and do whatever you want.
I mean, I've been doing some questing stuff, but it's usually been with the aim because I want some of the items that'll come out of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my main thing has been like trying to build a house and getting like, I've been big into my smithing. So I've been trying to get like my smithing skill up, so I really like crafting.
I presume you've got the. You will, because it's a remastered one, so it'll have the house building expansion.
Yeah, I've got that, but I haven't done the house building stuff in a few playthroughs. I actually don't like it that much anymore, purely because of how long it takes to get all the resources together, even if you're buying them, in order to build all the various aspects. And also, like, when you even have enough materials to like make certain things happen in the rooms, it takes a while then for those things to happen once you said, yes, I want the thing.
Yeah. That's pretty much one of the reasons I went up to the Mages Guild. Because if you complete that line, the Archmage is killed. You take over and you've got a swanky pad.
Though I'm not sure if you can't, your stuff when you store it in there can get lost or not, because I wasn't sure. Because, you know, like storage boxes and any of the Elder Scrolls games can be interesting, and I wasn't sure if the ones in the Archmage quarters were ones that were safe.
I think they are, because I use them on the 360. It's you've got a cupboard at the end of the bed, and I just, you know, kept throwing dragon bones and such in there because they're so bloody heavy.
I sell dragon bones most of the time for good easy money.
With them, can't you?
You sell them. You also make armor with them later on. But this, like dragons are cropping. I had two dragons crop up earlier at the same time.
Yes.
Like they're becoming dime a dozen. So it's like, give me your bones.
Yeah, it, walking along, it's like, oh, there's a dragon. Come on then, twang, 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 hack, 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 burn. Okay.
I think we better let one of the other pools talk about what they've been up to.
I will just add on to the end there that the first playthrough I did in 360, I sided with the Stormcloaks.
But they're racist. That really
bothered me, because I just thought, Imperials.
Yeah.
You know, I'll side with the Stormcloaks and I'll see where it goes. And as it turned out, you're all a bunch of wankers. I don't really like you lot. So, this time round, I'm kind of not. I haven't put my. I mean, gone in within either side.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of wandering around and, you know, and they're saying, yes, this place should be for Nords. And I'm a cat. I'm right here.
Yeah.
Right, fine, leave. But I think I'll be going in with the Imperials this time, just because I didn't the first time around and regretted it.
Cookie?
So I watched the new Doctor Who, which I really enjoyed.
Was that on? Well, I didn't hear it.
Cheeky sod. Really enjoyed it. Looking forward to the future. Although I would have preferred Grace to Graham being in the TARDIS.
Yeah, I liked her. And, bollocks.
Yes. So, really good on that. And all I've been doing other than that is playing a bit of Mario Odyssey and Splatoon.
Yes, I've noticed you've been playing Splatoon. Yeah,
yes.
That's when I put on the Switch playing Skyrim and go, Cookie's playing Splatoon too. And I'm like, aha.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Really good fun. It's great for quick games, though. That's what I like about it. You can just literally pick it up when you come in from work and just play.
How long are the matches?
About 3 to 4 minutes.
Oh, wow, that is really quick.
Yeah. So, but there is a... I found that you've got a... So if you had the game, say, there's actually a co-op mode, like a bit like Horde on Gears of War.
Okay.
Where you have to get gold pearls and stuff from the... Oh, I can't remember what they call it. Octopids.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that. So that's cool. And you've also got a sort of single player. They sort of become agent for something of a new secret agent thing to help rescue the Inkoids. So it's a bit more, there is a bit more to it than the original Splatoon was. But there is lots of unlockable stuff as well.
Hmm.
You can buy the in-game currency that you get when you, as you level up.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we've been watching American Horror Story.
2 seasons.
Ah, cool.
Great.
Obviously because the seasons are separate arcs in and of themselves, yes, or separate stories in and of themselves, we didn't feel too bad about watching Coven, which, mm-hmm, is that third season or fourth?
Third
season, yeah.
Later on.
Yeah. At the same time as watching the newest season.
Apocalypse. They might tie up, though. That's the thing. But yeah, we have to get Coven.
I've been watching it.
We're pretty far through Coven. Like, we will finish Coven before we get far into Apocalypse at the moment.
Yeah, because Apocalypse is still going weekly. So
yeah,
it's only up to about the fourth episode of Apocalypse.
I think in the UK, I think the third episode's on tonight whilst we're recording.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm not saying anything. I've seen Dave Internet was good enough to let me see the. I would recommend watching Coven.
We'll get
What like before the rest of Apocalypse?
I would say there seems to be quite a major tie-in.
Oh. Interesting.
Well, we'll see, because we've watched up to about, was it episode 8 of Coven or something like that?
I believe so, episode 8. Yeah, roughly around there.
Also, I have a suspicion that this season might tie in with other seasons of Apocalypse. I've got an idea about it may tie in with the first season.
I think it would a little bit, considering what happened with a certain character and a certain outfit.
That's part of it, yeah.
Because I have seen the first season, it's just I gave up watching Asylum. It just wasn't doing it for me. So.
Yeah, they are a little bit mixed.
Yeah.
Some of them really work, and some of them are a bit... you're treading water a little bit here.
But you've been enjoying watching American Horror Story then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
One thing we will be talking about next episode, though. Supernatural Season 14. Because that starts today.
Ah, cool.
Well, today in America... early in the morning in the UK, but we won't be watching it super early. Because
we kind of got fed up of doing that.
Also, it's a bit it's a bit tiring.
And it's really, really annoying when you get like 3/4 of the way through the episode and suddenly the stream goes and it's just like, no!
What's going on?
You try and get it back within about like 2 or 3 minutes, but then after that point, it's just like...
Too much has happened. Yeah, too much has happened. Too many things.
No.
That's fair enough.
Okay, I think that's it for this episode.
Yeah, so that is definitely it for this episode. So it is good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Super Retroid on Twitter and Retroid on Eurogamer.net.
Not Yuri Gamer.
No, Yuri Gamer is a completely different thing, which is for the Nerds After Dark.
It's good night for me, Paul, and, Paul, a.k.a. one-armed_cookie on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at emking at there. I'm on Twitter at emkingma.
You're not used to doing that, though,
no,
are you?
No, I'm also feeling a bit... also, I started a little side... It was meant to be a daily podcast, and then I got quite ill. But it's called Hockey and Stuff, and you can find it on anchor.fm/hockeyandstuff, where I will be talking about ice hockey and stuff.
If I could say you could have used it, puck you, or don't give a puck, or puck you all, etc. There are various... various hockey spins there.
For puck's sake.
Yeah.
And it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett. And you can find show notes over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also on Twitter as at Nerds Podcast.
And we're on Instagram at that as well.
And Instagram at Nerds Podcast as well. And Facebook.
As Nerds Assemble Podcast.
And
we're on iTunes and Stitcher.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. On iTunes and Stitcher.
All right.
So, good night.
Good night.